This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. Episode 369, Jonathan Singleton, one of the funniest, easiest guys to talk to. I mean, I always kind of get into a groove where we're just hanging out. It's awesome. So Jonathan Singleton Music, if you want to follow him. His last 3 number ones as a songwriter, Maddie and Tay, Die from a Broken Heart. How does he sleep at night? Things a Man Ought to Know, Lainey Wilson.
Yeah, I know a few things a man ought to know.
Same Boat, Zac Brown Band.
We're all in the same boat.
He's co-owner of 50 Egg, which is his publishing company, and Luke Combs is the other co-owner. So, you know, they're paying people to write awesome songs. He's from Jackson, Tennessee. Drove to Nashville every chance he could during college to write. Got a publishing deal to write songs. And he was an artist for a while, still a great singer. He's the whole thing. He's funny, engaging. After 5 years, he's back. Here we go. Jonathan Singleton on the Bobbycast.
But tell me about Rural Eats and how it, you're half kidding, mostly kidding, but I think there's...
Yeah.
You have a brilliant mind. So why would Rural Eats be different than Uber Eats? What rurally is going to happen?
Well, it would be in the country.
No, I get that. I know what rural means. I'm saying, would it only be certain types of food? Would it be delivered to you in a covered wagon?
I mean, I think it would be homemade. You know, they would make it at their house.
It's unsafe, but it's interesting.
There's the Mennonite grocery store, wherever that is. So it would be like a bologna sandwich or fried bologna sandwich.
Yeah, so we're disregarding all the rules about food and making food.
I don't know if the Mennonites do that. Can we say that? I think they might be.
I'm not even speaking. I'm talking in general with Rural Eats as a brand. It sounds like.
You know, it's a gamble.
Yeah, I do.
It's a gamble, like moving to the country.
Yeah, I like it in concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have another idea also for a country artist named Keith Rural.
Mm.
All my ideas are kind of based around...
The word rural or rural?
Urban versus rural. No, I was like,
rural.
That's all I got.
That's a lot. You can unpack that for an hour. Mm-hmm. Rural, if you say it like 3 times, it starts to feel funny.
It does. It's hard to put in a song, rural.
Have you put it in a song?
We use rural route a lot.
Like rural route. We went on a rural route. It just even feels weird to say.
On down a rural route road. Because you know how we like to do the R thing.
Say it slow.
Rural route.
Rural. Road.
I guess you say rural. I don't know.
I would just go, if I were saying it fast, rural route.
Rural route.
I'm from Arkansas. Yeah. I'd be the rural route.
Yeah, rural route.
The rural. It's... It's the rural route road.
It's not going to be in the title, I don't think.
How did you get a Grammy nomination? I mean, this in a loving way. How does he get a Grammy nomination?
We were trying to write a pop song that day.
No, I mean, like, how did you get a Grammy nomination?
No, I'm telling you.
I wasn't looking for, like, the real... Yeah, I was like, how did you...
I don't know. We were trying to write a pop song. We took a break and wrote a like a real song.
Are you being for real?
I'm being very for real.
Okay, yes. So I like this. So you were trying to write a pop song.
I think at the time, I shouldn't say pop song. I think at the time, Rascal Flatts were cutting. That was a long time ago. Rascal Flatts were cutting, and we were like, hey, it was me and Barry Dean and Luke Laird. Just go, hey, man, we really need to get something in here. They're looking for a single. So we worked on that and worked on it and worked on it. And we, this is true story. We were jokingly writing funny country songs. There was a lot of dirty things that happened. And we were just kind of clearing our minds, I think, for a minute. And then I think Luke Laird's joking lyric was Diamond Rings and Old Barstools. Me and Barry were like, wait, that's pretty good. And I think Barry has the recording of that song. It was about 40 minutes it took us to write that song. And then we went back to our other song that we'd never, nothing ever happened to. And, yeah, so we got a Grammy nomination for that thing. But the same Grammys, Lori McKenna was nominated for Girl Crush. Mm. So I just didn't even go.
Yeah, you didn't watch it. You haven't even checked, probably. You haven't even checked the result because you know.
I don't think we won.
Yeah. So you're like, naturally funny. I mean, I would assume, are you married?
Yes.
Okay. I would assume your wife, it'd drive your wife crazy. Because you probably know you're funny and you think you're funny. Does she still laugh at you?
She's pretty funny too. Like, okay, but she gets my weird sense of
humor.
But
does she
think?
Does she ever go, okay, I get it, enough?
Because
my wife, I don't stop.
You don't stop?
And I'm always trying stuff on her. And yeah. she's funnier than I am, which drives me absolutely bananas.
Right.
And she is like, okay, enough jokes.
Right.
Because I won't stop. I will try. Does that happen with
are
your wife?
Are you trying them as in, like, for stand-up?
Some.
Purposes? You
Some.
Are?
Or with her, and I'm curious at the dynamic with your wife is where I'm getting to this. I'll give you an exact example on the nose. I was doing the Opry, and they're like, okay, you have 12 minutes. And I was just doing straight stand-up because I was getting ready for a couple shows that I was doing here, stand-up shows. And I went out and had a few new jokes. And at the Opry, you can't really launch your full arsenal of jokes. I'm 100% clean, but most people there are older and they're not going to get pop culture references or even semi-cult. I mean, they're just, it's tough. You got to be right down the middle.
Yeah.
And I went and I told this joke and got a pretty good laugh at the Opry. And I was like, feeling pretty, as my wife and I were driving off. And I know if I ask her, she's going to give me her real answer. I don't have to agree with it, but she's going to give me her authentic answer. And I said, hey, that's pretty good. And I said, for me to really feel good about the Opry, you can pull them off, put your headphones off. For me to feel good about the Opry, like, that's rare. I said, I really killed. And she goes, yeah, that's good. She goes, but that one joke you did, the new one here, you could actually make that better. I was so offended. I was hurt. I was deeply hurt. Like, someone took a knife, stabbed it in my sternum. And I was like, oh, you know, like, and I was like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
How do you know about jokes? And she's like, oh, I mean, I guess nothing. But
I mean, she's like, well, I was sitting there and I didn't laugh.
She was like, you know, I mean, what? And I was like, okay, fine. Okay, just so you feel better, how would you change the joke? And she was like, well, when you're talking about us talking about something serious, and you could say it this way instead of that way. And I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. So I went home, thought about it. Like, God dang it, she's right.
She's right.
And so I went out the next time. I did it how she said it. Freaking rocked the place.
That's awesome.
Is it, though? Yes, it is. It is. But I was hurt.
Well, it's nice to have somebody sitting
absolutely.
There. Absolutely. That you know is going to say, here's maybe...
It's awesome.
And be able to do that.
I just am so weak.
If one of these guys had said, you know, Bobby, hey, you could make that joke better, that probably wouldn't have went so well.
Yeah, that we'd have a different body in those seats. now, my wife is on, but it hurt it a little bit. Like, it was difficult for me. I'm pretty good with it now, not always great, but she's really good at that. And you say your wife is funny. How is she with not only your humor, but what you do for a living? Does she have...
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah?
Well, she doesn't love country music. That's not her first thought. A lot of things will be on the radio and she'll, you know, it'll be creeping up the top 10 and I'll play it in the house. She'll be like, oh, I love that. When did you do that? And it's like, well, it's, you know, it's
by
on
the time
radio.
It's on the radio, we have a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
But that's super helpful too. And it's easy to, in the same way, I think I bounce those things off her to go, did we go too far? Is this too, whatever you want to call it, too country, too on the nose, too kitschy? Or there was one time we were driving down the road and I had gotten a demo back and I played it for her and she full laughed. When it got to the chorus, she laughed. It wasn't a funny song.
Oh, I thought it was
No, not a funny song at all. And She laughed, and I kind of paused because I was enjoying it. I was like, man, this demo sounds great, you know? And she laughed, and I was like, wait, what? And she was like, well, it's pretty stupid. You know, it was a really honest answer that I don't think I was prepared for at that time.
Did you feel offended?
Oh, 100%. She still brings it up when, you know, somebody says, oh, Jonathan wrote so-and-so, and she's like, oh, well, he also wrote this song.
I didn't react in a way I'm proud of. I didn't. That's why I brought it up. I was like, how did you?
Oh, I did too. It hurt my feelings.
What was your outward action?
You know, I don't remember. I think 2 or 3 minutes after, you know, a logical conversation about the hook and the way that it fell and that I agreed with her. But I think initially I was pretty offended. Or my feelings were hurt a little bit of like, I thought this was great. Like, I thought we were doing great. And I knew at that moment also, because she's just a person that listens to the radio. She's not a songwriter or a. That there's no way we're getting that song on a record either, you know. So that hurt a little bit too. Because
it's awesome you have that though.
Do I now?
It's awesome. Do you have that?
Oh no!
Even
doubt.
If you don't go to the well all the time.
Yeah.
If you need to go to the well, do you feel like she's going to give you her honest opinion?
Oh, 100%. And also, she doesn't have. We've just had our 18th wedding anniversary, and we've been together for 20. So I don't even really have to ask if I just put it on in the living room. If she doesn't pay attention, I know I've kind of missed a little bit. And I know that's not the target audience most of the time. You know, if it was Meet Math or somebody like that, she would be 100% in. But
is she big into Christian artists, big Christian music? You said Meet Math. Is that
no? Is that a Christian band?
Aren't they? Aren't Meet Math a Christian band?
I thought so.
Yeah, that's what I thought that was. I like Meet Math too.
Yeah, they're great. No, it's kind of indie stuff, and she likes a lot of. She loves Kacey Musgraves. She loves, you know, there's quite a few country artists she loves too, but. That's not the first choice. I can tell that she's being nice to me if she puts on 70s and 80s country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't really care about that.
Yeah. 70s and 80s. I'm having Crook and Chase over in a couple weeks together.
Oh, yeah.
And that, to me, of, you know, urban will come by. Rural. Yeah. Keith Rural will come by.
Keith Rural, yeah.
Keith Rural's arch nemesis, Keith Urban, will come by. Or yourself, prominent songwriter, producer. But, like, Crook and Chase, that's awesome.
Pretty awesome. They were huge, man. That was what everybody watched.
And I was explaining to my wife, and she was like, oh, I don't know. She's from Oklahoma, but she's 12 years younger than I am. So she's 30. And she was like, I must have missed Crook and Chase. I said, I think you did.
I think you missed Crook and Chase.
But I listened to him every weekend.
Yeah.
The Countdown. I used to watch him on TV. I would tell like Jimmy Westbrook from Little Big Town. Like that's how I discovered them, was they were on Crook and Chase on their weekend show. Yeah. And so, because at that time, I was in Arkansas, but I had gone into like pop and alternative music when I was on the radio, but they're going to come over, and that's really awesome to me because I was such a massive fan. And with what you do, you get to either write with, mingle, hang out. Who is it for you that you got to meet when you're like, that's freaking awesome? Like personally, that's freaking awesome.
Oh man.
Cause you have so many, I mean, and you write and you have had big artists cover, and I don't mean people that have prominence, but like that's to your own heart, like this is so cool.
Yeah, you know, we cut the first things I ever cut in town was at Steve Cropper's studio, who was the guitar player for, you know, 1,000 things, session guy, and wrote Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, and he's the guitar player in Blues Brothers movie. He's the guitar player.
Oh, that's cool.
I literally one day somebody was in the back of the studio, and the engineer said, "Hey, man, go see who that is." And when I opened the door, like, my guy's standing there, you know, Steve Cropper. That was pretty big. I went to the studio one day with Keith Urban to finish. I had to write a bridge. They were like, hey, Keith's cutting this song, and he didn't really like the bridge that much. Can you just come over here and write one? Like, no pressure. And so I did. He ended up not cutting it. Ronnie Dunn was in Big Machine one day when we were over there. And he was so sweet. He was so nice. I had two songs on Ronnie's last record. The one Jay DeMarcus did.
He just put one out, so probably the one before.
The one before, I guess. And I talked to him about it, and he talked about the melody and the lyric and stuff like that. It was real gracious and nice and sweet. And that was pretty great.
Ronnie's one for me, too.
Yeah.
Because, again, I think we probably have same sensibilities.
Right.
Brooks and Dunn, massive.
100%.
I remember where I was in specific parts of my life when those specific songs were on the radio.
Yeah.
And Ronnie and I became, Well, people always warned me about Ronnie, first of all.
I'd heard the same thing.
And they were like, he's a tough one.
Right.
And I'm like, well, yeah, so am I. So either right. we're going to hate each other or we're going to be best of friends.
Yeah.
And he got into like some sort of fight with like one of the, at the time, Clear Channel guys. And I think, moved here and fight. I didn't know what it was. So I was always like, I need to keep one eye open for old Ronnie Dunn.
Right.
And so I was doing comedy as an intro to Reba at the Kennedy Center Arts on CBS. And so I went up and I was doing a few minutes of comedy, and Brooks and Dunn were performing that night, and Kristen Chenoweth. It was all the Reba getting the honor.
Sure.
And so, but I hadn't met them, and I was like, oh boy, I love them. But how do I tell them that without like being a nerd? Right. So I didn't. I just went to, I saw them, I said, hey, and Kix is like life of the party.
Right.
You meet Kix, nice, welcoming, big hug, great to meet you, all that. And Ronnie was like, hey, man, how are you? He's good. Walked away. So cool.
Yeah.
Saw him again. Talked a little bit. And we just kind of struck up a conversation. And I went and did some photo stuff with him. We did a charity thing together. Then we became like friends.
That's awesome.
We were like texting.
Yeah.
And it's, I think he thought, hey, Bob's cool. And I was like, and I would get a text. And I'd be like, look at my phone. That's Ronnie Dunn texting
me. Right.
He sang it at our wedding, Caitlin and I's wedding.
Oh, that's awesome.
And not as like, hey, would you, my management asking me? I was just like, hey, you're going to be here. Neon Moon, like, it's a sad song, but like when I met my wife, that's a big song. We sang it all the time.
Sure.
He's like, yeah, I'll sing it for you. And I was like, what life is this? And that's, it's got to be the same for you at times.
Yeah.
And the first story you told, because I don't know that guitar, that the
Steve Cropper.
I don't know
him. I'm a super guitar nerd.
Absolutely. Like, I got to think that is so freaking cool.
Oh, it was way cool. Yeah.
And then especially if they're cool.
Yes.
And I assume he was, or you.
He was very cool.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It'd
have been cool if he wasn't. He'd been I was so disappointed.
Yeah. No, it was great. Warren Haynes, I did the same thing with Warren Haynes. He was a guitar player for Government Mule and played with the Allman Brothers when, you know, some of the guys I wrote with him one day, which is pretty awesome. Do you remember when Kevin Costner had a record deal?
I wasn't here, I don't think.
He was on Universal South, and I was too many, many moons ago.
Is that the Grove when you were?
Jonathan Singleton, the Grove. Yeah. We're on Universal South. So he was doing that. He did this record, which was pretty great, man. And I think he donated all the money that he made on this record to some charity. But nonetheless, so it's me and Randy Houser, and there was Eli Young Band and a couple of guys playing this show, and Kevin Costner was going to play, and we were all in the back in this room, green room, getting ready. So we're all talking and having a drink, and everybody's talking real loud, and all of a sudden Kevin Costner walks in the door, and it just got deathly quiet in the room, and it was like very quiet, and you could tell he knew, he heard the rumbling coming down the hall, and then it was kind of stopped, you know. And so he got up and walked over to everybody and was aware of everybody's music and who he was playing with, and really, really nice, man, and tried his best to make us not be weirdos. But I have a picture with me and Kevin Costner, and my mom still brings it up. She's like, yeah, but I could be like, you know, I got nominated for a Grammy. She'd be like, well, you remember that time you met Kevin Costner? That's pretty cool. Right? Pretty neat.
There's nothing you can do that eclipses that.
It will never top it, because she was Dancing with Wolves. That's all she sees. And I was like, oh, my God, the postman's in here. What are we going to do? It was pretty neat. He was pretty great. And his band was fantastic. Man, it was a good record.
It's a weird question, because you have to say something positive, and you probably mean it. But Kevin Costner as an artist, as a singer,
yeah,
compare him to someone, because I'm not going to say, is he good or not? That puts you in a weird position. Compare Kevin Costner as a singer to something.
I mean, I wouldn't say he's a Chris Stapleton singer, you know what I mean? It's probably that kind of, what do they call that, like a stylist kind of thing, like here's the song and I'm going to take it and do what I can do with it, you know? I mean, I don't remember him being a bad singer, but I also don't remember being a great singer. Now I can't say an artist that it's like. You
if
know
he was, if you went into a place and he wasn't Kevin Costner, he was that same guy that was singing, and it was like a Nashville bar downtown, would you be like, oh, I guess pretty good? Hey, like, you wouldn't think anything.
I think so. Yeah. I don't think that I would, because his show was different, because it was all kind of opportunities for photos, is what it was. You know, he would like, and kind of pause and think, and he knew what his game was, but he was also making money for charity at that time too, so you know, he's like, but yeah, I would think it was good. His band was fantastic, and I remember going specifically to talk to those guys and meet them, because I thought they were great players, you know. So he was aware of those guys, or or had a friend who was aware that they were great players.
Yeah,
at least
feed it to him in his ear beforehand to let him know.
This guy,
so much has happened for you since the last time we saw each other.
Yeah.
Not in this room, but on this show.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Luke Combs stuff first. But congratulations, by the way.
Thank you, man.
I mean, just
thank you.
You produced though, Cold As You, and I'm going from memory here.
So it'd be the back of the deluxe of the last record and this whole record.
But I'm thinking of the songs, though.
Oh, yeah.
That went number one.
Forever After All.
That's it. That's
Forever After All, Cold As You.
Cold As You was the one. How did you get on with Luke Combs' team? Because Luke has his people.
Sure.
And he has his people.
Right.
And it's hard to break into to something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't when he was, air quote, Luke Combs. I did early on, and I signed Luke to a publishing deal.
So you have a history with
100%.
Luke.
Yeah. I've been on, you know, as in no way whatsoever take credit for anything he's done, because he's just great, and he's a great guy and a great singer and a great songwriter and all those things. But I was there. I saw him at Tin Roof. How many years ago was that now? 5 years ago, 6 years ago?
I saw a thing today he posted on Instagram that was like 5 years ago, and it was a tour when he was just playing bars. So probably,
right, so probably
5 years
ago.
Yeah.
And we became buddies. We started going hunting and hanging out, and I just thought, what a great songwriter. I didn't think I thought anything about his artist thing, because I really wasn't aware of that. It was a songwriter show we were playing, the Tin Roof Revival. It feels like so long ago, and it wasn't really.
It actually isn't. I know. I guess he's done so much, if that makes it feel like
we've been kind of marathoning since all of that started. So we did a little publishing deal, and we wrote a bunch of songs. I think the first song I wrote with Luke was Texas, Houston, We Got a Problem. And then we kept writing after that. And me and Randy Montana were writing with him. He was playing some club in Missouri. We were out on the road with him. We didn't realize how good it was going. You know what I mean? It's like we weren't at the shows. We were at these couple that we went to. And he said, well, I got to have a big song, because I'm going to do when I play stadiums, you know, I'm going to need this big song. So when he left the bus, me and Randy were like, look at this guy, dude. He thinks he's going to play stadiums like soon. You know what I mean? So I was like, whatever, let's pacify this guy. Let's try to write this song. So we wrote Beer Never Broke My Heart was the first like big song that I had on his stuff. And then as you kind of move down the page, we had talked about, you know, production stuff, and we had done a bunch of demos together, like his first demo session I did with him. And so it's kind of like in the room, in the conversation of most of those things that were happening. And then when Scott kind of went away for whatever reason, I specifically remember Luke going, well, hey, man, you're going to have to help me produce these records. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not. Like, you should call him back and talk to him again. And I think he actually did. And then it ended up being me and Chip Matthews. It's just been fantastic. And Luke's gotten so good at it in the relatively short amount of time. I mean, in success, musical success years, he's been out for 20 years, you know, but in real time, I mean, it's a short amount of time to get as good as he is at knowing what his crowd wants and wants on the records and wants live. So it might be the easiest job in town, man. I mean, I'm knocking on wood saying
that.
You
had to earn it, though. You know? Like, it might be the easiest job in town at this point, but it was, I mean, like, you're riding with Luke early because you saw or you heard something in his songwriting.
Sure, man. Those songs were just great. I mean, yes, he can sing anything and make it great, but he wasn't doing that. I mean, he was purposefully pouring over lines, and he still does. It's very specific of what, because he was such a fan of country artists, and especially the three or four that, you know, the Eric Church thing is, I keep saying, like, quit bringing up Eric Church, dude. Stop. Yeah, but I love Eric too, but he was very shortly removed from being the fan in the front row of those shows.
Yeah.
So he knows what those people want, and he's still that guy. It's hard to stay that way, but he has.
When you guys wrote Beer Never Broke My Heart, what I love about that song is how forceful that freaking chorus hits you, like in the face.
Yeah.
Was there ever and this is going to be a really impossible question to answer because you may not remember, but was the melody ever different?
No.
So it was just immediately, Yeah. Lord, I mean,
yes.
Boom.
Well, me and Randy, too. You know, Randy Montana had a record deal in town, too. He's a really good singer. And we get very excited when somebody can sing. I was like, oh, but dude, he can sing these things. Like, let's do it. Like, you can't wait to be able to do that. A lot of times we're kind of maneuvering melodies for artists, you know, to kind of, oh, well, he kind of does this thing or whatever. But Luke, we were not scared at all. I remember that being to us, it didn't matter what the verses were. As a matter of fact, I think they were mostly kind of afterthought, you know, like once the chorus was set, and I remember Luke beginning to start being really busy at that time, excuse me, and he had to leave when and he tells the story too. Like, we kind of wrote the chorus and we kind of had a basis of what the verses would be like, and it's like him and knock on the door. He's like, hey man, we forgot this radio thing, you got to go to this thing. And he's like, all right, I'll be back. But once we had the chorus, it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter what I'm not saying they're not good. I'm just saying, yes, the chorus was the thing, and we knew he could do that.
The chorus is the thing on that song.
It's the thing, yeah.
Like, if you, like, sing that song,
yeah.
It's just that. And also, he sang it 3 feet from me, and it's scary because he's so, I mean, you're like.
It's like a bear.
Oh, my God.
It's like a bear growling.
It's violent.
Yes, it is.
It's, like, violently perfect, though.
Yeah.
So if you. Yeah. Okay, when you're writing that, I mean, and obviously you had long, but would you sing it that strong?
I tried to. I was singing the notes, but it's not. No way. I mean, I don't think I'm a bad singer.
You're a good singer. No, you actually are a really good singer.
But I've sat next to him a bunch of times, and when I sing, and he knows it too. You know what I mean? He was very aware of my, you know, history as an artist and stuff like that, and so he knows it too. And when we do stuff together, you can tell he's in the very nicest Luke Combs way, just trying to outdo me just a little bit, which is so much fun. But his is so guttural and such a blessing, like voice from somewhere else, you know. I was singing the note, but not like Luke sings the note.
Yeah, Luke sings the note.
It's gross and awesome and dirty
it's
beautiful.
Scary and amazing. Yes. Yeah. There's only been a couple people, and you would probably lend more than this than I ever could. There's only been a couple people that I've either performed with or beside or sat next to as they perform. So I put that in that close range. That are violent, good singers.
Yeah.
I've been able to do a lot of cool things with a lot of great singers.
Yeah.
Shay.
Oh yes,
Carrie,
flawless,
like the perfect and strong, but like violent. And Luke John Party,
yeah,
violent singer,
yes. Yeah,
like he's beating that microphone with his mouth when he sings. Who else? Stapleton gets pretty violent at times,
well,
but
you
not
know
always.
What, too? His is bizarre in that you would think he was screaming those notes, but they're so controlled.
I agree. That's why I say not always, because you're ready for it. But only sometimes does he get to that. But it's like he perfectly lays off of it for a little bit.
Yeah.
And
if you or I were going to do that, you would have to like rev up. You'd have to run to the microphone from 10 feet away to make that noise.
Yeah, I would run. I can even run to the microphone. Yeah,
but there's some, you know, Drake White does it.
Yeah, it's
you
good. Know? Drake's good. Yeah.
Drake does it where it's that, whoa, like, oh, that's, maybe too much there is what it feels like. You know what I mean? Like, but they selling it too, and it's that confidence of that thing of going, like it's they're going for it. I've wondered a bunch of times, like, do they know they're going to hit that note, or is it just like I'm going to do everything I can to? It was like two football players,
or do they need to go that
other.
Hard to hit it perfect?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know.
I don't either. When I look back at, and I want to talk about Laney in a second because.
Oh, yeah.
Won the ACM for Song of the Year, and Laney and I have been knowing Laney for a while, which is awesome to see her actually doing really well. But when you go back to the beginning of kind of your catalog of the songs that you wrote, and you and Jim Beavers wrote together some big hits, Watching Airplanes, Billy Currington, Don't, Why Don't We Just Dance, similarly funny in a room, you and Jim.
Oh, Jim. Oh, no doubt, man. He's a really, really funny guy. He did the Triple Play Awards this year, which I dread. I don't want to talk in front of anybody. I drank a beer just to come over here. But Jim made that thing so great, man. And it's always, he can always find humor in any situation. He's a very funny guy. I interrupted you.
Go ahead. I like it because that's what I'm, you guys are similar in that you just make me laugh. And so Jim would go out on the road with me when I'm doing stand up, and I'd put a little music in my stand up.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. And so
that's great.
Jim has written Jim and I have written a lot of songs together.
Okay.
That are funny songs, like comedy songs.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they're all very kitschy. Fanny pack, you know, right. We got a song like that. Yeah, I saw my grandmother naked. We got like all of that if Ray Stevens was starting right now, that probably more of
he'd
his
be on it.
It'd be more of his brand. But I remember Jim going, "Hey, listen, I'm writing out every day. I'm grinding every day. I'm trying, you know, he's writing with Brothers Oz, but everybody's trying to find their own spot now."
Sure.
And he's like, "But sometimes I just am burnt out. I would like to write comedy because I like comedy."
That's amazing. He'd be great. He's great at it.
And so, and we did. We have a lot. And I just wonder for you, do you ever go, "All right, I'm writing, I'm producing, I'm doing country all the time. Like, I just want to do something that's a little different, a little fun." Because you're so talented when it comes to funny.
Yeah,
do
yeah.
you?
Absolutely. You know, I didn't put any of those things out. Over COVID, I got a buddy of mine, Rob Snyder, bought me this as a gift, which was so sweet. This Steve Vai Ibanez guitar. And about that same time, this new drum pack came out on Superior Drummer. And I did a punk record where I do like, I Drive Your Truck as a punk song and Girl in the Country song as a punk song. It felt so fun to spend 5 or 6 days on those things. And I've also done In the Barn at the House. I get some guys over it and it's like, "Hey, let's do songs that I have written and let's just do them as funky as we can do them." Because we grew up doing that. We were in between Memphis and Nashville in Jackson, Tennessee. And we played blue stuff and funky music all the time. And those have been fun. I wish I had a thing that was not musical.
Do you?
I don't know.
You ever write for funny? Because I'm gonna have to stop complimenting you. So this is it. I'm gonna talk about more stuff, but I've stopped the compliments because
I have some comedy questions here in a minute.
Well, you don't. I'm not the one being interviewed. Anyway, so do you ever just go, "I have this funny idea and I want to write a funny comedy original song"?
If I do, I write a little bit of them and I send them to Jim Beavers. I have done that.
That's awesome. You should do that to me now.
I'll put them out. Jim thought a couple of my ideas were good. Me and Jim did write. There was a song called "You Had Me at Man." It was a YouTube thing. And so we were riding one day and I was telling him this deer hunting story and I was like, "Yeah." And so the deer comes by and I pull my bow back and I just meh like that. And he's like, "Wait, you did what?" And I was like, "Oh, that's how you make the deer stop. You make a deer sound." And he said, and somehow we got to, "We should write a song called You Had Me at Man." You know, anyway, we did. And in the video, there's a deer playing.
You did a video. So you didn't do the song, you did the video too.
Oh, Jim went full. Okay. He went full on it. And then we also wrote, I never can think of the guy's name that did the funny songs, not Ray Stevens, but after him, that had all the huge hits. He did the Shania Twain songs and these Rascal Flatts songs. Cletus T. Judd.
Cletus T. Judd, that's it.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, yeah. We wrote a song after we wrote.
He did parodies mostly, though,
he
right?
He did parodies mostly. Yeah. So we wrote, after we had written Watching Airplanes, me and Jim were writing one day, and Jim said, "Wouldn't it be really funny if we rewrote that song?" And we were the ones.
You did your own parody.
And we wrote our own parody. And he texted Cletus T. Judd, and he said, "Hey, man, what if we write Washing Airplanes? Like, this guy is, that's what he does for a living. He washes airplanes, and I'm just sitting out here washing airplanes." And Cletus said, "If you write that, send it to me and I'll cut it next week." And he did. And I think we had the worst song on the record, which there were some great songs on that.
The beauty of that is you parodied yourself.
Yes, which didn't feel as weird. But I've never done that because Jim is so good at it and I've written with him so much. And he's so fast, he's so quick on those things, and I never can. I still want to make them good songs, and that's not what you're. I mean, I'm not saying they're not good songs.
Don't insult me now.
I'm starting to get mad. No. But Jim, he has stopped me. He's like, "Well, you're thinking about this too much, man. Like, we're just getting down the page. It's funny. It's not a heart thing or a, you know what I mean? Or you're not trying to get a point. It's just funny.
You don't need too much depth.
Yes.
You don't. You, he, I. I'm doing again a show to this will come out like a week later, but I'm doing a show tomorrow night and Saturday night, and I would just tour and do stand up. I take Jim out, take my guitar, play a few songs, and I said, hey, I'm going to do, because I do some motivational speaking too. I do some like keynote stuff and combine all, because you and I have somewhat similar backgrounds in how we grew up. Like, we grew up in a trailer park a long time. We, you know, didn't have a lot of money.
Trailer prop bros.
Yes, that situation. Probably secretly cousins or something. There's a lot of things we probably have. Same blood in some way. So I did my first two. I'm doing two more this week. But Jim came out and watched, and I'm like, come look at it.
Right.
Like that, watch me do this and then look at it because I want to know what I can do.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to take that and flip it over a little bit, though, into like, who now will you go, hey, look at this, listen to this, and help me do what I do a little better with a fresh perspective, fresh ears.
Sure. Who do I do that
now?
With?
Yeah. Who do you?
Oh my God! Everybody. Like, I'm not a.
You get one person though. Who is the trust person that you're going to text something to and go, I just wrote this. I don't know if it's right or not because it's a little different. Put your ears on it and let me know your thoughts. But and they're not going to go, hey man, it's great. They're going to go, this part I like. This part's kind of weird. You're going to trust good and bad.
Well, it would. that's a real hard question because it would depend on what it was. A hit song. Is that what we're talking about?
Why not? Sounds good. You write a song.
I mean,
song.
It would be, it was, well, I know, I mean, I know who it'd be. The weird thing is she's not a songwriter. I mean, Tally, Giles Canterbury that works with us and I only kind of do that with her. I do it with my wife too, I think. But Tally runs everything for us. So I feel like I kind of know, like lyrically and musically, if that's right. The thing I don't know a lot of times is if that fits in the whatever version of country radio or whatever DSPs or whatever's hot. I don't know if it fits in that thing, and she does know that. So I do that with her.
So that
a
would
lot.
Be where you need perspective. Like, does it fit
100%
into the scope
yeah.
of what is being picked as popular now?
Yeah, I'm purposefully not trying to listen to current country radio. Country songs. I shouldn't have said country radio. I forgot where I was. And you're purposely not trying to do it because you feel like you're chasing something that's too late if you're on that.
Yeah.
If you're on that train and you go, oh, man, I love Morgan Wallen. I love John Party. I love those things. And I wait. I'm just now on Morgan Wallen's two, you know, records ago because it's too late for me to try to chase anything that he was doing on that in that time. And a lot of guys are the same way. So I try to not listen to those. And I'm afraid it'll get in my brain. I'm a little scared that I'll be like, oh, man, that thing. Because you kind of know how to do it. It's like if you know a little bit of magic, you know, like here's a magic trick. Well, all I got to do is just hold a cigarette behind my finger for a little bit longer. If we do that in a writing room, too, you know, it's like, oh, I see how they got there. But I've got to wait 10 years to do that, and then I'll bring
then
it back.
Then it seems new again. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You have any rhymes that you look back now and go, oh, I kind of regret putting that rhyme in a song? Because it was...
Oh, yeah. Thousands of them, yeah.
Where you hear it and you're kind of cringe. You're like, I didn't mean to rhyme on and gone. I it's so easy.
Or you say the same word. You don't even realize you said the same word.
What comes to mind first when I ask that question? It doesn't even have to be... And if you go, you know what? I'd rather not because I may implicate another person. I completely understand... But I, and as you think about it, I have things that I have done or written, and I'm like, and that have done pretty well. But I'm like, yeah. Oh, I can't even.
Well, there's certain rhymes we always make fun of as songwriters, like True and Blue. And sometimes you can't help. Like, it's, you know, we look up in the rhyming dictionary, and it's like, I can't believe that I'm looking up the word truck in B rhymes again. Like, I'm doing it again. I know I should know everything that's there. True and Blue, trucking up, love and truck.
Wait, no. Love and truck. Hold no. on. So the you're just rhyming the
I mean, it's Yeah,
love,
you can make it.
Yeah.
It depends on how country the artist is, uh-huh. if they can pull that off. Dirt and shirt. It's like the, what does they call it? Redneck nursery rhymes. You know, like when they feel that way, that's when I get a little bit, like I kind of cringe a little bit. But they also work, you know? We've heard those rhymes a million times because they work.
And no one else is thinking about that rhyme like you are who lives in it and does it every single day.
Right.
Yeah. They're probably like, dang, that worked. That's awesome.
People love Dr. Seuss books, man. They love them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
They
feel so good.
Publisher company that you have now, I'm intrigued for a couple of reasons. So 50 Egg, which is why is it called that?
50 Eggs, a Cool Hand Luke reference. Somebody eats 50 Eggs.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen Cool Hand Luke.
You never seen that?
Man, you got homework. Is that like Robert Redford or something?
No, Paul Newman.
That same person to me. I'll be honest with you. For a long time, yeah. Selena Gomez.
I can see that.
And who's the one that's like her? Who's the one like Selena Gomez?
Demi Lovato.
Demi Lovato. They're the same person to me. Like
they could be to me. I don't know either one of those people.
So those two people are the same person to me. So one drove a race car.
Who?
I don't know. Paul Newman. Did he drive a race car?
In real life?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Did he?
Isn't that who you're talking about, though? You should know everything about him if you're referencing something about him, right? Isn't
just
that the
rule?
Just
the movie.
So 50 Eggs. How did you guys come up with that then?
Well, I love that's my favorite movie, Cool Hand Luke. I love it. I think it's great. I've seen it many times.
Okay, well, let's rewind. What the heck is Cool Hand Luke about?
Cool Hand Luke, he's a guy that lives in a small town. He's bored, kind of smart guy, lives in a small town and bored. And so he gets drunk and he cuts the heads off of parking meters. So they catch him and put him in jail. And so he's in, I think it's Mississippi. Oh, you've heard phrases. What we have here is a failure to communicate.
That's from that movie?
That's from the movie, yeah. So he's in this jail, and the warden guy is kind of like, it's the same guy kind of that's in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, with the glasses and the thing and the dark kind of figure that's supposed to be the devil. And I mean, anyway, so in jail, he kind of does things to just pass the time. You know, he'll try to break out, or he'll do something funny, or they'll play cards. And there's one time he's playing cards, and he bets all the money in camp, and then they win and all this stuff. Anyway, so he bets that he can eat 50 eggs, and that's the like the big kind of pinnacle of the movie where it starts.
Does he
eat 50 eggs? Yeah, spoiler alert.
Does he vomit everywhere? Like
he doesn't. He can't vomit. Can't vomit in the movie. That was a rule that they had set to the thing. So he eats 50 eggs, and I can't remember what happened.
How does it end?
I think he gets killed. He just escapes prison and he gets killed. Yeah,
that's how that movie ends?
Yeah, that's how it ends. I mean, that was a long time ago.
God dang, that's terrible. I did not think that's where that was going.
Yeah, we just ruined that movie for everybody.
Well, it came out in like 27 or something, right? I don't know.
Yeah, so anyway, in the movie, he also said, well, why would you do something like that? Why would you eat 50 eggs like that? He was like, I don't know, something to do.
And I've heard that
felt,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that's where that was from.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way about a publishing company. I've been working with Tally on that thing, and so our first signing was Luke Combs, and then Reed Isbell that still writes with me and Luke. So now the company is me and Tally and Luke all together, and we got great people, and it's turned into way more than something to do. It's really great and fun, and seems like a way to help. It seems like a way to help for Luke to kind of, that's the front lines of Nashville to us. I think is new songwriter comes to town, what do I do? You know, I'm good enough to go play some gigs and have some people hear me, and now I'm going to get like a little bit of money, and that's going to help me do XYZ, you know, or what is it, XYZ, like CDE, you know, at least. So it's fun doing that, and we've had a lot of people come out of that thing, and Ashton Kraft signed up to Big Loud, and Tyler Braden's in that pile, Wyatt McCubbin, Gray Robinson.
Freaking love Gray.
She's so great.
She, still slightly green, but the right amount of green for her to take that next big step.
Yes. And her songs, too, and all the pieces. So we kind of, like, it's mostly songwriters, you know, and that it's songwriters plus, I think, is what we're doing. But her songwriting is so interesting to me, and I've sat and written with her, and it's like, there's a few artists in town where it's like, oh, I should just shut up for a minute, and she's that way because I'm not my perspective doesn't fit into her song most of the time. So you're just kind of helping, and I like doing that more than writing a song for somebody. So you're just kind of helping Gray because she kind of knows where she went. Her language, the way she gets to things, is so interesting.
Yeah, it's like an advanced emotional quirkiness.
Yes, yeah, that's a good way.
Not listening to her sing, because I like her as a performer too, but her songwriting, you're just like, oh, that's an interesting way to say that. Oh, and that's what, and you're like, oh, and by the end of it, you're like, oh, I get it. Yeah. I never would have thought to even say it like that.
But,
yeah. Yeah, really,
that,
really enjoy her.
Damsel in This Dress song, I would have loved it. There's no way I can write that song. So it feels like I'm not working in that room. You know what I mean? I didn't write that song with her. I wish I had. And then the fireworks song, and I saw the title, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, she did that on my show. That show. That song.
I was like, oh, it's almost 4th of July. No, I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I heard the song, and I was like, holy crap.
That's what I said to her when she finished it. I was I was like, wait, what? That's not how I expected that to end.
Oh, man. Me either. Tally texted me the song, and it said fireworks on it, and I was like, oh, okay. And, oh, man. And when it was over, I was like, okay, no, you got me.
Like,
you
is that at this stage of your success where you've had so much and you are now really succeeding in other parts of the industry, not just writing songs, but is that like fulfilling to you to be a part of that, like that next generation and not feel like you have to put your fingerprint on it exactly, but be there for them in a way that makes them better?
100%. And I think that's how you stay excited. Like, we've got guys and girls coming in there every day who are so excited to be there, and they're writing with. He's like, who are you writing with? And it's, they say a name, and it's like, oh, I don't even know who that is. You don't say that, of course. But their excitement excites me, you know, and I love, I still like beating them, too. I like to beat them, you know, and in the nicest way ever. I like to, you know, destroy their dreams. No, it is exciting that as they get better and better and better,
yeah,
that it drives you to stay better and better and better, too. And that's the only way you can stay that way, I think. You know, by hearing what the new people, because how many times can we True and Blue and Dirt and Shirt and Love and Truck, you know, and they're finding new ways to do it, which is amazing to me. I thought me and Jim and Derek were 10 and Jesse Eisenberg, we was like, but this has got to be the end. There's no way new people can come in and find new ways to do this, and they can. It's amazing.
So what do you spend most of your days doing now?
I write nearly every day. I love writing.
You're still just sitting down and writing a song. Get the laptop out and write.
4 or 5 days a week I'll do. And it's mostly artists these days, you know. But I still love it. And I feel like, and I've heard a million times, you know, the more creative you are, the more creative you are. So I don't want to stop doing that. I'm not sure what I would do, you know. Otherwise, I would still be whatever I was doing. I would still be writing a song in my head, I think. I still love doing that, and I love when artists come in and you're solving the problem for them, you know, and we need an up-tempo single, or we need a ballad, or we need a whatever, or helping them work on their idea. So I write every day. Tally runs everything in the office, and then I will, you know, pop out to get a water, and she'll be like, hey, Jonathan, what about this thing's happening, this thing? We're like, okay, cool, we'll talk about it this afternoon. And she's got it. She's got good at it and smart, and I'm aware of everything that's going on, but she's driving for sure.
You're writing songs. You're managing a bit, right? I mean, it sounds like you have personality. You have to manage a little bit, at least.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. In that way, managing.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's definitely a different part of the brain.
Yeah.
What about the itch to perform? Because
it doesn't exist.
But you're really good, and you were really good, obviously. Maybe people don't know that version of you at this point if they've only been here 8 years, 6 years,
yeah.
So they wouldn't. But it did exist for a long time.
It did. It had died before I got here, I think. You know, we played bars since I was 15 or 16 years old.
It died, huh?
You know, in the way of what made that fun, you know. Once I kind of met my wife and I didn't want to, you know, drink too many beers or hang out and watch the sun come up, it's like, okay, well, what am I doing then? It never was to me about the crowd and me feeding off the crowd. We played too many bars for that. It was, you had to find another thing that was interesting in that little bar where nobody was paying attention to you. And for me, that was the guys I was playing with, you know. And I still play with those guys. And I have at my house a little, we call it the party barn, and I have a stage and I have gear set up. And once ever, you know, 2 or 3 months, we'll get together. My guitar player is now out on the road with Luke Combs, and then my drummer's with Eric Church, and other guys are playing around town and stuff like that. So we'll kind of set a time, you know, a bunch of old guys will set a time, and we'll just go play songs.
That's an all-star band.
Yeah, we'll go play, and we did it. What was that, 3 or 4 weeks ago? We played a little bit and hung out and just, you know, hey, y'all remember this song? Let's play some song. And that feeds my itch, because that was the thing I loved. Is hearing this guy play the song that I was singing or this drummer play the song that I was singing. So I have no desire to go. I like playing songwriter nights, you know, sometimes.
What about playing guitar, though, just itself? Obviously, you're a big guitar guy.
I do it every day.
Do you sit at home and just play by yourself ever?
No. I mean, because I'm playing guitar all day, writing the song.
If you're writing the song and playing, that's not, to me, you're playing guitar.
It's not woodshedding.
Do you still enjoy playing the instrument of the guitar?
Yes, and I get to do that in the studio a lot. I have a studio at the house, and I do a lot of stuff at home, and I play drums and bass and all that stuff, so I'll play acoustic on something, and then I'll play drums, and I've been doing that for 10 or 15 years, and then I'll play everything in the thing. So I get to play, you know, guitar solos, and I get to do that thing. But I've never been a great guitar player. I love guitar players. I love songwriters, too. I'm still not sure I'm great at that. But I love guitar players, and I love tones, and I love this guy hears this way, and this guy hears it that way. But I've never been great at it. I have become pretty damn good editor. So I know what I want to hear. I know what I think Vince Gill would play on guitar. So I'll just chop it up, and I can kind of make that happen in Pro Tools, you know. Not comparing my.
Yeah, yeah, I heard it. That's horrible. The clip. That's the headline. Put that in the headline. Thinks he's Vince Gill. Insults Vince Gill. Yeah, that's what it is. Insults Vince Gill. This is what I want to play here. You were talking about it, and I just liked hearing you talk about it. I don't want to stop you while you're talking about it. But here is my Drive Your Truck punk version. Here you go.
You have
to
drive your truck.
Jam. That's awesome. That's jam.
That's fun,
that's
right?
Jam. That's awesome. Chicken fried. Here you go.
You know I like my chicken fried. Cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. In the radio world.
Yes, sir. And then when it rains, it pours. Here you go.
A Sunday morning, she woke up.
This was the jam. Hold on. Stop it for a second. I love this one. The Green Day bass behind it.
You got to. It's Mike Dirnt.
Oh, it's almost like Longview with like just slightly turned down with a better vocal. Yeah. And it's just, I want to just give it respect and say how much I love the bass line in this.
Thank you.
As you play it again. Go ahead.
Sunday morning she woke up fighting man. A bitch in the morning on and on about the time I had. And my Tuesday you could say that.
It's not, and I'll get to why this, it's not even funny, it's awesome. It's so good. It's
Thank a reinterpret. You, man.
And I know you were sick, you said like scratching some itch, doing something different, and I was like, do you ever, it's just awesome. It's so good. It shouldn't be that good hearing them like that. I should be like, that's hilarious.
Right.
But it's, that's, those are so strong.
Thank you, man. Thank you. There's a band called Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. That was that did that years ago, and I forget the name of that record. How Do You Like Our Country or something like that. And they did the Dixie Chicks song, Earl.
Goodbye, Earl.
Goodbye, Earl. And it changed my whole life. I love, love, love punk music, and that is kind of my escape from, because it's still got to be musical, right? So on my way home, if my brain is fried, I put on NoFX or I put on Fugazi or I put on Bad Religion or Me First and the Gimme Gimmes or even Weezer can do that for me. Or I love Everclear, Secret, super Everclear fan. But I loved those, and it makes you feel something different. It doesn't feel like you're working. But I thought, how funny would it be if I just did? And I called. I thought maybe I Drive Your Truck was too far because it is kind of funny, you know? And I was like, well, that's not really a funny song. So I called Jesse Alexander. I was like, hey, I'm doing this stupid punk band thing, can I do I Drive a Truck? She was like, oh, please do that. But it was an escape. It was so fun. And where did y'all get that from?
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about where we get stuff. We don't reveal we don't tell our sources. We're reporters, basically. It's just excellent.
Thank you, man. That's fun.
I do want to talk about Lainey. Lainey Wilson. I love her. And I mean, I knew Lainey before just before, you know? Yeah. And so same person today as then.
No doubt.
I just think it would be so cool to help somebody that you like really like get their first number one. And that with Lainey, I mean, it changed her life.
Yeah.
You know?
And Jason Nix was in that too. It was the first number one for him too. That was amazing. And Lainey, you know, we did that number one party for the thing. And so that was the first time, you know, from, it takes a long time for those songs to come out. So I don't remember when we wrote that song, but it had to be a year before that. It was early on. And seeing her as an artist then, which was fantastic. But then now she's doing press, like we're doing a number one party. And it's like, there's press and there's things, and she has to look and smell and feel and do everything right. You know what I mean? And she's just so flawless at it. You know what I mean? And her personality is such a, in a Dolly Parton kind of way, where you just, how do you not like Lainey Wilson? You're a real piece of trash if you don't like Lainey Wilson. And also, a great song and a beautiful song, and I love that song. And it was wonderful to write it with her. I don't think we thought that would be a single.
Because it was slow. Let's play a little bit, Mike. Things a man ought to know.
So. Yeah, I know a few things a man ought to know. How to know when it's love. How to stay when it's tough. How to know you're messing up a good thing. And
again, you're probably not drawn to that as a single, but tempo is pretty slow.
Pretty slow.
It's a different.
Jay Joyce did the record, and it breaks in the middle a bunch, and it's like that feels, that's like a no-no on country radio. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of reasons for it not to be.
It's funny, those songs where there's a lot of reason for it not to be successful, when the occasional one, and that's what it takes, does become successful. It's
sure.
It happens such a big way because it's 100%. Different. And it wins ACM Song of the Year.
Yeah.
Like, and launched her career.
Yeah.
So it's cool that the label took a chance on making it a single.
100%.
You guys wrote it like that. And yeah, Lainey's just delightful. We haven't put it out yet, but I don't care if people hear this. But we wrote a song called Opening Act. We were opening for Garth Brooks. Garth called and said, "Hey, I'm playing Razorback Stadium. It's 80,000 people. It's sold out. We don't need to sell any tickets. Just come and be the act right before me."
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I don't know about that.
How many people now?
80,000.
Oh. Goodness.
I just felt like people weren't going to understand that we're a comedy group, yeah. And we're 80,000 people. And so my wife's like, "You will kill." I'm from Arkansas. She's like, "You will kill yourself if you don't do this."
Right.
And I was like, "Fine." So I accepted it. And I go and we play this song. It's Nobody Cares About the Opening Act, and we wrote it about us.
Sure.
And so I called Lainey. I said, "Hey, we're going to do this version with other artists that know really the grind of being an opening act."
Huh.
I said, "So we've written this song. We put it on TikTok and had like a million views. Right?
That's awesome.
Playing it live is great."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Do you want to be on the verse? Do you want to do a verse?" And I was like, "Well, you know, I ain't done a lot of comedy writing," but she goes, "What? I was like, "Yeah, just write whatever you feel. It doesn't have to be funny."
Oh, you got her to write it also.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I sent her the whole song, but I sent her an empty verse that wasn't even in the song. Yeah. So
she kill it?
She came in with two verses.
Did she?
She came in, she goes, "How about this one?" And she sings it and she's like, "Da da da da." Do you have it, Mike? By any chance?
I don't have it.
Okay. Because we haven't released it yet. We haven't even said that we were doing it together. But then she's like, "Because that's my first one. How about this one?" And then she sings it. And I'm like, "God dang, that's even funnier than the first one." And she's that's like, awesome. "Do you mind if I change the melody a little bit?" I was like, "No, this is what this is. Do whatever you..."
Yeah,
and then she changes the melody just a little bit. And she's so... Even, again, as a writer, even writing comedy for us, which is something she wasn't comfortable in, she was so authentically, uncomfortably awesome.
Yeah.
That it just works. And that's kind of her personality. Like,
yeah.
She just is authentic.
Yeah.
And you're going to like her, or you're going to go like, "Wow, I can't believe she said that. But I like it that she said that, even though it makes me feel slightly uncomfortable." And yeah. So it's really cool that you were able to be a part of that, because I like you and I like her. And that's a win for me.
Oh, man. It was wonderful. Wonderful. I love that song. I'm still so proud of that song.
We're going to wrap in a second, but the last couple things I want... We've done an hour. I could literally do 2 hours with you.
Oh.
But I can't, because I got like important stuff to do. Yeah,
sure,
like
other people stuff. Bigger things.
I have an idea for a song. I got a couple here.
Okay.
The first one is called Plural Rural Murals.
I love...
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Plural Rural Murals.
So there's more than one.
Yes, in the rural... And you inspired... I thought of this while we were talking. So there's more than one...
Plural.
Rural murals.
So there's more than one. They're out in the country.
Out in the country.
Murals. But so murals would be like graffiti on a but it's water like, tower thing, right?
And
or a bridge.
Sure. A mural, it's like a lot of, you know, it's a different
plural,
thing. Since
rural.
Murals. Yeah.
Who's going to say, well, let's get Lainey to do that because she can't even say those three words together. You don't even need the song. You just need a recording of her trying to say
for
it fast.
Your ma-
say it fast three times, yeah.
So that's my first song idea.
I love that.
Plural mural. Dang it. Plural rural murals.
Or plural mural rurals.
That doesn't work, though. I thought that, too.
You
but
did?
You need that now.
You had this before.
No, I thought that's why you were telling me about the word rural. And I was like, oh, that's a funny song idea. It's a comedy song.
That's funny.
About the plural rural mural. It's even hard to say. Plural, and then you get the crowd to sing it back on the second one, and they can't say it either.
Plural, rural. This is you. So it, introduce your song, because you're.
I have no idea. I'll do it. Let's try it right now.
Let's go.
So,
it's by Keith Urban,
I
by
have
the way.
No. Okay. I have no melody, but it's like you're.
No, I mean, you're on the radio show.
No, I don't care about that. That's a whole different
thing. I want to hear that, though.
Oh, I can set it up. Here's my latest song. It's a song about seeing art in the country, and then you see another piece of art. It's so unexpected. It's plural, rural, mural. See, it's hard to say. It's hard to get the crowd to sing back, and everybody has a good laugh. Yeah, you're driving down a dirt road.
Maybe it's slow. Maybe it's a slow song.
Plural, rural, mural.
And then you can spread it out. You know.
Yeah,
I mean?
You don't want to spread it, though. You lose the comedy factor.
That's true.
If you can say it easily, everybody would say it.
That is true. Oh, I didn't know it was a funny song.
It has to be funny.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's funny. So that's it. You drive into the country, and you see some art. And you're like, why is there art out here? I'm in the country. And then you see another piece of art, and you're like, holy cow, that's some plural rural murals out here.
Right, right, right.
Tell me that ain't a comedy hit that crosses over.
I love it.
Okay. Let me see what else I got here. Because I like, do you keep a list in your phone of things?
I do. I got some funny ones.
You don't have to. You can even do real ones. Don't share anything that you're super precious about because people will for sure steal them.
I don't care.
Okay. I have a song called Small Peepee Mobile. Now, here's the thing about Small Peepee Mobile.
Okay.
And why I'm nervous about sharing it with you. You have a big truck.
Right,
out
right.
There. Yeah. And it's kind of, that song's kind of about that. Guys that are big
trucks. Oh, I got you.
Yeah. It's like, you know, why are your tires so big? You know,
I love that.
And you're driving your small pee-pee mobile.
Pee-pee
small mobile. Pee-pee mobile. You know, pee-pee for wiener.
Yeah.
Playing wiener.
It could also be like a children's toy thing. That's a small pee-pee mobile. Like if they got like a...
Yeah, it's mostly about your truck. I got the inspiration when I came over here.
I was trying to change it for you.
Yeah. Okay. I gave you two. Match me.
Yeah, I had one call, and I've played this for Jim. Country credit card, like a... Yeah, so he's out of money on his country credit card. He's a new artist in town, and you gotta have, you know, a Filson jacket and some boots. So he's calling his dad and said, "Dad, can you put some money on my country credit card?" That was it. That was the whole idea.
Interesting. I'm going with small PP mobile still. Is my
single. My title was better.
Yeah. I thought it was gonna be like your country credit card, like in the country. Yeah, your credit card's a little different than what it would be in the city.
Like no, he's like buying country cred, though. You see what I'm saying?
I do now.
Okay, yeah.
I do now.
Yeah. See, I didn't deliver it well.
You know, people don't really know you for your storytelling, so let's move on to something else. Okay, how about I'll be your little spoon, but I'm a dude singing it to a girl.
I love that.
And I'll be your little spoon.
You're in the front.
Yeah.
I love that. It's sensitive. You know, the times, it's perfect for that. Mm-hmm. Maybe you make it non- What is that called? Like you don't do boys, you don't do girls or men, or it's just what is that called? When it's
gender
not either
neutral?
One, like they's. It's all they.
It's a gender neutral life.
Gender neutral song.
When I go to sleep at night, I mean we got.
I love that.
When I look into the sky and see the moon, I'll be your little spoon. That's not really it, but you know who knows?
Yeah.
I got three there. Those are hits.
Moon and spoon is also another rhyme that I was.
That's hard for me to get to. That was a lot of bending and rhyming to get that one there. And then see if there's anything. Okay, I just gave you three excellent ideas. Do not steal them. If you win a Grammy, I will play this back. All right, but I think rural mural, dang it, plural rural murals. There's always something to that.
Yeah. I have recently switched over.
Oh, I got more song ideas.
I don't have any of my funny ones in here.
So some of my lines for a small peepee mobile, is he having a midlife crisis or does he just hate the environment?
I love that. Uh-huh. I love that. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's just one line I wrote for that one. Okay, well,
Yeah.
I thought I had more lines to that, but I guess that was just the only line I had there. Well, listen, you are one of my favorite people. Like,
thank you, man.
Just love talking.
This is always fun, but man. You're so good at this.
We did easily an hour. It's so cool to see your publishing company thriving. And the fact that you've been able to do it at a high level for so long and you're still going, I don't have it down, because there's no such thing as having it down. I got to keep chasing what's coming at us.
100%.
Yeah. That's inspiring. Even
I would
for
not
me to hear.
Say that I had it down,
but you could.
Out, yeah.
But with that many number one songs, I mean, I think just number ones, 13 to 14. You have so many number ones aside from the producing, aside from, you could just go, I'm the best. I mean, I'm great. I've written 13 number one, massive songs too, not just songs that hit number one and people forget about them because they rang the bell and the label pushed it up.
Right.
But Chasing Airplanes and Why Don't We Just Dance? Beer Never Broke My Heart. Those songs are massive and are going to be around for 10, 12, 15, 20 years.
I hope so.
Played.
Yeah. I hope so.
It's awesome. So it's really cool that, you know, Die From a Broken Heart, by the way, from Maddie and Tay, I told them that song was like their song to me.
Me too. I love that one. In the new version of Maddie and Tay. You know what was the first one? That was
Girl
great.
In the
Girl in the Country song. It's great. But again, it was that, okay, these girls are older now. How do we do this? I love that problem. I love that problem and trying to help them figure it out. I love them so much. They're wonderful.
I want to leave with this, and you can leave a little serious nugget for people listening, because we have a lot of songwriters that listen to this, because I spent an hour with people who we were able to break down the craft a little more than you would in an 8-minute segment, mm-hmm. right? And you talking about publishing and these writers that you're signing. As a songwriter, if somebody's listening and they're going, man, I think I'm good enough for a publishing deal. And they're sending stuff out. They're not feeling like they're being heard. It's a very difficult town to actually be heard, be listened to. What does someone do? How do they start being a songwriter for a living or getting with someone at a publishing company to listen?
Oh, it's different now than it used to be, because we have social media. We have, you know, so many ways of getting to those things.
How does someone get to you with a song?
Me?
Yeah, with a four or five songs they feel super passionate about, how do they get to you?
That's a good question. I mean, we're usually going to people because we have so many, we have 12, 13 writers that are great songwriters. So we're not like actively looking until something pops up, you know what I mean? But we're not looking in the same places that they are. I mean, it's a lot of like Tin Roof Revival. It's a lot of those things. There are songwriter nights in town. We're still doing those. We're still kind of scour those things. And two guys that we've signed are off of Instagram, you know. That's still happening. And it's not...
Tag you and stuff, possibly? Just see
that was annoying. Okay, do that.
Go to your house and play outside. John Cusack, hold the moonbox above the
head. They do. We get a lot of, you know, hashtag 50 egg thing. And I think somebody probably looks at those. It's not me. I mean, I don't know that I'm on there anymore. You know, I like to hang out with my kids, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's probably songwriting. It's a lot of word of mouth. So if you're not, it's still the same old game that's... Go out and meet more songwriters and meet more songwriters. And you get better when you do that. And if you're not regimenting songwriting, then, and you have a backup plan, that's probably not going to happen anyway. You know, you got to sit down and write those things and study and study and study the guys that you love. And that's what you do. I mean, I know that's what the new guys are doing. And we got a new guy over there at Wyatt McCumming. It's just one of my favorite songwriters. And everybody's doing it in a different way. He's not crazy on TikTok or Instagram or doing those things. But it was a lot of times it's like the people that we love and songwriters in town that don't have publishing companies. You know, we're in a great position, me and a few other guys, Ashley Gourley and Dallas Davidson, of people going, other songwriters that are in town and going, oh, my God, have you heard this guy? And I get those a lot now, which is great. So that's the way to do it. It's work, like anything else. Work. There's nothing. Nobody's going to call you and go, hey, man, you got any songs? There's too many people here that are great and are working their butts off to try to get them heard, you know? Yeah. And it's not knocking on doors anymore. They still do that, by the way.
Well, listen, I know what's going to happen, so I'm going to make it not awkward here. I'm not going to accept a publishing deal from you guys.
Okay.
I know you've heard three great ideas, and that's all you need to hear to know. I mean, I came up with those while we're sitting here. Two of them I came up while I'm sitting here with you. One, I already had small pee-pee going in my mind. I'm going to pass on this deal.
Okay. Okay.
But maybe next time around.
And I could get you in touch with some people.
Good. I don't want to be in touch with anybody. I don't want to be in touch with me. I'm all good on touch. I'm touched.
So you're just going to keep your...
Yeah, I'm going to keep my other jobs. Yeah. We're doing okay right now.
So you get to keep your publishing too, which is is a good thing. Yeah.
I'm really rich off that.
But you should really meet, I can't even think. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus.
Look, you are awesome, and I could compliment you. I just like hanging out with you. Thank you for coming over. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, too. This is fun.
There he is. That's our guy right there, Luke Combs. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time.